The teachings of General Conference are the considerations the Lord would have before us now and in the months ahead.
Our marching orders for each 6 months are found in the General Conference addresses.
For the next 6 months, your conference edition of the Ensign should stand next to your standard works and be referred to frequently.
I encourage you to read the talks once again and to ponder the messages contained therein.
I exhort you to study the messages of this conference frequently, even repeatedly, during the next 6 months.
You're listening to Conference Talk Podcast, where it's conference weekend every weekend. Each weekend, we discuss talks from the most recent General Conference of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
That's right. We'll share some insights, make some connections, and hopefully have a bit of fun as we study the words of the awesome men and women that God has called to direct His church in these latter days. I'm Matthew Watkins.
And I'm Meg Tilton. This episode, we are talking about Elder Gong's address, Ministering.
Nice short title. I like it.
Yes. I was like, oh gosh, what's the title again? I'm like, oh, it's just one word. That's good. Yes. So pretty much sums up what the topic is going to be on. So
thank you for listening to the Conference Talk Podcast.
Yep, we're done. You know, if you have any experience with ministering, then it's good. But we were just talking beforehand, right, that you were just released as an Elders Quorum president, and I was just called as a Relief Society president. So hopefully we will have some good things to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did you like from this talk?
So I really loved several things. First, I loved his, again, prophets, apostles are not infallible. They occasionally goof, and it's very fun when they do. He did goof when he was saying his talk live. You remember he said that the sister met the sister missionary who baptized her. And everyone said, wait, what? So I see in the printed version of the talk, it's very clearly listed that taught her, the sister missionary who taught her. So yeah, that was a fun little, a little Easter egg, let's say.
Yeah. It's like when President Nelson said he loved being a mother. Do you remember, do you remember that talk?
I don't remember that.
Yeah. So he was talking about a talk that he gave, and it was when he was visiting some other country. And so there was a translator, and he said, I just loved being a mother. And the translator, he said, knew what he meant. So he translated it correctly as like, I loved being a father, you know, or like, I'm grateful for mothers. I don't know exactly what the context was, but his wife caught it and I guess teased him about it later.
So. She said, don't you take my job. It's a really important one.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yep. They make mistakes. So that's okay. Yeah. So any certain points that kind of stuck out to you that you thought, oh, I wish I have maybe would have known that as an Elders Quorum president, or focused a little bit more on that when you were over that? Because I wonder if people really realize that, you know, I'm now that I'm in this new calling, it, you know, really the Elders Quorum and the Relief Society presidents are over the care of the ward, and it really releases a lot of that pressure and stress on the bishop. And I think it probably depends on the bishop, but
it does, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to, this is kind of our main focus is on ministering. So,
yeah. And every time we had general authorities come giving us training, they would say, hey, bishop, let's role play. What happens when someone comes to you with, you know, such and such a need? Nine times out of 10, he'd say, here's the correct answer. And then he would say, here's the Elders Quorum president. Let me introduce you. Right? Here's the Relief Society president. Let me introduce you. Let's see who your ministering brothers and sisters are. Let me introduce you to them. And so a lot of these traditional bishop responsibilities that we've seen for years are supposed to be devolved down to the Elders Quorum presidents, the Relief Society presidents, and from then on down to the ministering brothers and sisters to take really an active hand. I mean, so long in the church, for decades on end, it's been that the home teachers and visiting teachers would go into the homes, have this great discussion with this family. Hey, is there anything we can help you out with? Hey, is there anything that's, you know, going on that you need our help with? And occasionally, maybe they'll ask the home teacher for a blessing, but usually it's, no, we're good, brother and sister, so-and-so. And then, you know, we actually need to get going here. And then they're actually going to go meet with the bishop about the fact that their house is about to be foreclosed or that they have no food in their pantry, right? All these things that they weren't sharing very much with their home teachers and visiting teachers. That's supposed to be different in ministry. We're supposed to be taking an active role. And I don't feel that that has quite trickled down and that we've caught the vision of that as a church quite yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's interesting. We have our ward conference tomorrow. So we're supposed to be going and doing visits. And I was just on the phone with the bishop concerning a member of our ward. And he was talking about how maybe during that ward visit, he will go visit this sister's husband. And I was, and now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, actually, no, you're supposed to go visit a youth. Like, that's who he should probably be going to visit, you know, because that is his.
The bishop, you said?
Yeah, the bishop.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I think our bishop really likes to be a little bit more hands-on. And I will say, we come from a ward. I think it depends on the ward too, because our ward is not a needy ward by any means. Like, the needs are actually pretty minimal, you know, in terms of welfare and, like temporal needs. And so, it's a little bit of a different. So when there is somebody who has a temporal need, he has, I think, a little bit more bandwidth because there's not that many of them that are that way. So, but yeah, it's just, I think it depends on the ward, on the bishop, how he likes to do things. And,
I would push back on that just a little bit. I don't know if your bishop listens to the podcast and I'm not in his position. No. But if the bishop is, like, the bishop's like, I don't worry, I can handle this. It's not that big. You know, I mean, we've got a small. You're still depriving your elders, quorum president, relief society president of a valuable opportunity to serve.
Yeah.
So I would encourage all bishops and bishoprics everywhere to heed the prophet's counsel and start transferring those responsibilities down to the elders, quorum president, relief society president. Let them help you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that might be. I'm a pretty outspoken person. So, you know, I think that he and I will probably have that discussion, you know, and say, this is really, you need to like really dump a lot of this onto us. Cause he's told me some things that I'm like, you know, maybe you should have dumped that onto the Elders Quorum president or the previous Relief Society president, you know?
I will say in my experience, bishops have a far easier time dumping it on the Relief Society president than the Elders Quorum president. there's a different level of trust there.
Why is that, do you think?
Oh, I got reasons. I've caused some reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's good. I mean, I'm working with great people. I'm sure you worked with great people, and it's just a learning curve for everybody. And I do think I agree with what you originally said, that I don't think that the church has, as a whole, has really grasped this concept of what ministering is. And to be in 100% transparent, I actually have had a really hard time with ministering because I'm kind of a check the box kind of person. And so when I was there was visiting teaching and it was very clear, like, this is what you do to accomplish visiting teaching. You know, you visit them, you give a lesson, you check on them. I was really good at that. Then when it became kind of open-ended, I was just like, oh, I don't really know what to do. Like, how do you really know if you're done? I mean, you aren't done really ever, you know, and how do I know if I'm doing the right things? And so it's been harder for me to grasp ministering. And maybe that's one of the reasons I got this calling is Heavenly Father's like, it's time for you to really grasp what ministering is. So, I think that's part of the problem is that it's not a checklist anymore. And some people kind of struggle with that because then it's kind of left to them to figure out what they should do.
And this is really diving into part of the talk, what you just said. There is a great, great quote in here. And I'll be honest, I did not read this talk in English. I actually used it for my Spanish study. So I'm probably, from my notes, I'm probably mistranslating this. But there's this great quote where he said, those who understand the true spirit of ministering do more than they did before. Now, that is so very important because I think the general consensus, the general sentiment I seem to feel from members of the church, at least that's what I've seen in the various quorums I've been in the past 5 years, is that ministering seems like it's the easier road, right? You look at all the changes that have come in the church. You look at the introduction to preach my gospel. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have these memorized discussions. right? And it's not rigid. It's flexible. It's kind of, you know, I'll just kind of do what they need in the moment. And you look at the four, the strength of youth changes, and all of a sudden there's no hard and fast rules. It's very much just kind of, you know, hey, you know, general principles and guidelines. And you look at ministering, and it's no longer, here's this prescribed, get into their homes once a month, here's the definition of what counts, and here's the first pregnancy message. It's just, hey, you know, work with them to establish what level of contact they're comfortable with. And we're not even reporting how many people do it anymore. We're just reporting how many people are interviewed, which is something we can control, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to look at this as lowering the bar. When Elder Gong is making this clear, and President Uchtdorf made it clear when he talked about For the Strength of Youth, and every time there is one of these law of Moses to higher law transitions, they try to help us understand, if you think this is easier, you're doing it wrong. Christianity is so much more demanding than the 613 commandments in the law of Moses, specifically because you can't just check a box and say, hey, I'm righteous. You now all of a sudden have to start getting on your knees and receiving revelation for what to teach your investigators and what to teach and how to bless your ministering families. It's not just go and share a message that's from the ensign. You've got to receive revelation, and that is so much harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because along those lines, kind of, I've noticed even in other aspects of my calling currently, like when I'm asking a sister who's maybe over ministering, she's my ministering secretary, or even my teachers, like, okay, well, what do you want to do? They kind of look to me to give them that guidance.
What does over ministering look like? I don't know that I've ever seen an over minister.
Oh, you mean being over ministering? Is that what you mean? That's what I was saying.
Do you mean she's like she ministered too much, or?
No, no, she's my ministering secretary.
Oh, so she's the person that's over space ministering.
So she's over ministering, yeah.
I thought you were talking about some overzealous sister. Like, hey, calm down. Only go to their house once a month, once a month.
Yeah, yeah, no. No, no, I'm not dealing with that. But they struggle. Like, they want me to tell them what to do, you know? And I'm like, that's not really my purpose. I mean, I can counsel with you and I can help you, but this is your privilege and your blessing to be able to figure out what you should do. And I think that's what you just said about ministering, which is really true. Like, it's a, I think we need to look at it as a privilege and a blessing, both for the people that we minister to and for us, because I think every commandment is really for our benefit, really.
100%.
When you come down, when you really look at it, like, he, you know, Heavenly Father's not like, well, you should minister to these people, and when they if they respond, then you do this. Like, he's just like, no, you constantly love them, you constantly show up and are serving them, and he's asking us to do that because it will change us. You know, yes, it can have a very good and awesome effect on the people that we minister to, but the benefits really, I think, are for us. So,
isn't that great? It's regardless of the external outcome, the blessings are the same with the effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So I just think that that's a really important thing to remember about ministering, is that it blesses you as you bless other people. I mean, it's the same thing as a mission, you know, as missionary work. Like, I remember when I was on my mission, I realized really fast, I was like, oh, I'm actually here for me. You know, yeah, I'm here to teach people about the gospel and everything, but the benefits are going to far outweigh me, for me, than anybody else I will probably ever teach. So,
and the cool thing is, like, it's good to be consciously aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as Elder Bednar talked about in his MTC devotional, he said, it's the moment you start focusing on yourself that you start losing the blessings for yourself. It's when you're focused on others that the blessings just flow to you. It's, he says, you go out and you find exclusively what you're not looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is true. It's like this really, it's like this, I don't even know what the word is that you would call it, just this irony almost. Yeah, that's probably what it is. Like, yeah, the more you focus on somebody else, the more you will be blessed. But
that's what Jesus talked about.
Yeah. So,
right. Whoever seeks his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will find it. Yeah. It's every general conference, every time you hear a spiritual speaker, it's almost like they're Yoda, right? It's just, a mission companion pointed this out to me after we had general conference on the mission. He says, you know, I think I could be an apostle like Elder Scott. I said, oh, really? He says, yeah, you just say something and then you say it backwards after that, and it sounds profound. And He gave me a few examples. I'm like, yeah, that actually does sound profound and legitimately mm-hmm. true. There's a lot of truth. Doesn't mean you could be an apostle, but mm-hmm. that is a good speaking technique, and it teaches some eternal truths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's awesome. Well, to go along with what you kind of said, there is a quote by him in the talk that says, higher and holier ministering comes when we pray for the pure love of Christ and follow the Spirit. And I think that that's one of the great blessings, is being able to feel the Spirit and see the fruits of following the Spirit when you minister and having that love of Christ in your hearts. So,
and that is such a powerful, powerful thing. Mm-hmm. When he said to pray,
mm-hmm.
when we think about 1 Nephi 15, right? Nephi had this vision, revelatory experience, iron rod, said everything his father saw and more, and the entire vision of the book of Revelation and the destruction of his people, mm-hmm. right? Gets down from the mountain, sees his brothers fighting about the very vision that he just saw, you know, the interpretation mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
He says, why are you guys fighting? They said, well, because we don't know the meaning of the vision. We're just disputing. He says, well, have you inquired of the Lord? They said, we haven't, because the Lord doesn't, you know, tell us those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately dismiss the idea of revelation. And so many times, I feel like the Lord is just wanting to shake us by the lapels and say, why aren't you asking me? These mm-hmm. are my children. I'm asking you to serve. You mm-hmm. need revelation. They're entitled to have a ministering brother or sister that gets down on his or her knees and humbly pleads for them day in and day out. Mm-hmm. A lot of the you'll find this, you know, soon. Less so in Relief Society, more so in Elders Quorum. You'll get a decent chunk of the quorum or the class that don't know who their assignments are. Mm-hmm. If they don't know who their assignments are, sure as heck they're not praying for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you know, the ones with social anxiety and stuff, you tell them, you say, listen, I'd love if you went and visit them. I'd love if you did all these things. Let's start that as an unachievable, unreachable goal for you at this particular point in time. You say mm-hmm. it's a lot nicer than I'm saying it, by the way. I'm on a soapbox. Mm-hmm. But say, just start with praying for them. If you can just pray for them by name every single day, your heart will grow in love and you'll find it easier to reach mm-hmm. out and serve in love.
Mm-hmm.
And rant.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great one. Yeah, that's really important to remember that that's a tool. You know, prayer is a tool that God has given us to be able to accomplish the things that He is so readily and willing to give to us and help us with. So that's a really good thing. So you were talking about somebody who had social anxiety maybe and is struggling a little bit with ministering. And I think that brings up kind of a good point that he also made in the talk about where he said he's talking about the ministering gap, where more say they are ministering than say they are being ministered to. And the reason I bring it up with the comment that you made about somebody with social anxiety is that I think it's really important. And I've heard the benefits of this from a lot of sisters when they say, my ministering sister like reached out to me and told me, asked me what I needed, right? What I needed from her. And I think that that's so important to be able to do. Even if like, so I'm just going to take this. If somebody has social anxiety and you know that, you know, I'm not going to be able to show up at somebody's house and call them all the time, like I'm just not capable of that. That's a really important piece of information to share with the Elders Quorum president or Relief Society president so that they put you with somebody who's like, you know what? All I really need is a text or just an occasional check-in. So that the
all the social anxiety people together.
Yeah. Well, so that the match of the want and the ability is together. Does that make sense? So the want of the person who's being ministered to matches the ability of the minister.
Oh, yeah.
And I think as I've done a lot of reading on this, I've really come to realize that the key to success of ministering and being able to, I think, close that gap is the interviews. And I think a lot of people are afraid of the interviews. They're like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble because I haven't done it. And,
you know who's the most afraid of the interviews? It's the president.
Yeah. you know, they're like all afraid. And I'm like, I want to be able to tell my sisters, like, listen, there's no judgment. I'm just trying to make this work for you and for the people that you minister to. And I can't know that something's not working or that you're not getting what you need or that you're not able to meet the needs of those that you're assigned to if you don't talk to me about it. Like, I just need to know. That's it. And then we'll make a change, if we can and where we can and, you know, and help you. We want to help you succeed in the best way that we can. And that information is so vital to be able to do that. So I don't know. Did you find that when you were the Elders Quorum president that the interviews were really enlightening?
So I was called as Elder Quorum president right as we came back from COVID, and with half the ward not attending and everything up in flux, I was really hesitant to suggest a secretary because I thought it's Elders Quorum. It's not that hard to, like, we don't have activities hardly at all, which is a different problem for a different day. But I'm just like, you know, we got this. I've got some great counselors. And we don't have a lot of activities, so I don't think we need a secretary. I'm not going to take up a valuable resource from the bishop that he could be using somewhere where it's more needed because we were strapped for callings. I really regret that decision. And the reason is because the interviews, scheduling the interviews quickly became a full-time job practically. It is very hard to get on people's calendar and get them to show up and everything like that. So that's, and I'm just not a great calendaring person anyways. So it wasn't until 2 years into my calling that I finally got myself a secretary, and that radically changed the frequency and the quality of those ministering interviews. Now, something that I really loved that Elder Gong talked about from these ministering interviews is he pointed out that the ministering interviews is the president's chance to minister to the ministers. And that's something that I found myself doing when I was the president without necessarily thinking of it. The way that I got to looking at it that way was because of a talk that President Eyring gave, where he said that if you treat someone as if they're in trouble, serious trouble, more than half the time, he'll be right. And so whenever I met with my ministry companionships, before we talked about their assignments and their families and everything else, I just spent some time talking to them and saying, how are things going in your home? Right, a personal priest interview, PPI, not something that would be exclusive to Elders Quorum either. This is totally something for Relief Society as well. How are things going in your home? How's work going? How's your family going? You know, and maybe even ask some of the more probing, not bishop level, but probing questions like, are you having your family prayers? Is everything going all right between, you know, your wife? Like, what can I do as an Elders Quorum president to support you? Not even talking about ministry, just support you and your family. And that, I think, goes a long way, ministering to your ministering brothers and sisters in those interviews.
Yeah. So, as a side note, were you successful getting companionships to come together?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, usually they showed up separately. And, you know, it's, and you meet them on Zoom, you meet them in their time schedule. I think kind of, I don't know all the details of your ward. You said that you don't have a lot of welfare issues. Ours is kind of the same thing. There's a lot of CEOs and doctors and lawyers and everything. So time is much more precious than money in our ward. So,
Yeah. And yeah, I think that that's, it's interesting because they say, you know, it's ideal that you come with your companion, but I think that is ideal. But it's more like if I can at least get to talk with them. And in person, of course, is also ideal. But, you know, when we were called, you know, I was just called in February. I just told my presidency, I was like, okay, you take this third, I'm going to take this third, you know, to my counselors. And, we just called everybody. And even my counselors just texted people because we just wanted to see, like, how are people doing? How are they liking ministering? And, so we're actually doing kind of something that we're rolling out actually next week for the fifth Sunday in April. It's kind of, have you heard of the circles concept?
Oh, yeah, that's the app, right? The Circles app that the church uses, like, is like Slack, right?
Yeah, kind of. But it's also, or have you heard of pods? Have you heard of that for ministering? No. So some, I've heard of it more with Relief Societies than I have Elders Quorums. And a couple wards in our stake do it where they actually don't have set companionships, but they have like five or six women that are all in a, like a circle or a pod, and they all minister to each other. And okay. And
our ward has those. We call them book club groups.
Oh, yeah, it all accomplishes the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because I felt really, really good about that for our ward. Were my release side sisters. And then we started talking to the elders quorum and the bishop. And there was, you know, there was some back and forth about like, well, what about companionships and what about, you know, doing the one. So we're actually doing kind of like a hybrid where everybody gets a companion and everybody gets assigned to a pitch, like two or three people. But then they're also all put in what we're going to call circles. And as much as we could, we actually put, like, so if I had Brother A and Brother B as companions, if they're companions, the Elder Quorum present put them together, then I would put their wives as companions in Release Society. Yeah. And then they minister to the same people.
Okay.
And as much as we can. It's not perfect, obviously. But that way we're also incorporating the family. We're incorporating couples that they can work together as well as having a sister or elder companion, you know, and the sisters are still all under Release Society and the men are still obviously all under Elders Quorum. But it kind of goes along with Elder Gong's talk because he talks about how he talks a lot about companionships, but then towards the end of the talk, he talks about the importance of, you know, how Jesus ministered to the one and he administered to the 90 and nine. And then he talks about, you know, like a grove of trees and how they're intertwined and the roots and the branches intertwine and how ministering blesses, you know, not just individuals, but, you know, groups and wards and really generations. And so we're trying to kind of incorporate that where, yes, you do have a companion that you are and you're responsible for, you know, two or three people, but then everybody in this circle, you're also responsible for. And I kind of look at it as like a family. You know, if you had a family who had 10 kids and they're going on a trip and they're like, Susie and Bobby, you're in charge of Jane and you know, Henry.
It's like a Trek,
you
know, family or family home evening group or?
Yeah, it's just kind of like this more cohesive thing. So it's like, well, if you have somebody that you minister to within this circle that has more needs than you can, than you're able to deal with, then you bring in the rest of the circle to help you. And obviously if it becomes more than the circle can handle, then other circles will come in and probably the entire ward will end up helping in some instances. And so, I'm actually really, really excited about it. And when we talked to the sisters, they were really excited about it and just thought it was a great idea. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So, yeah. But I think that that is really one of the main things about ministering is like, are we taking care of everybody? You know, we can take care of the one and then we can also minister to a group and the groups can have a lot of power as well and be intertwined. And we're hoping it creates more unity within our ward too. So,
and that's an example of receiving revelation, right? Your mileage mm-hmm. may vary. That may work for your ward. It may not work for my mm-hmm. ward. And that's where the presidents are getting on their knees and finding mm-hmm. out how the Lord wants them to direct this work of salvation, which mm-hmm. is so very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Yep, it is. And I think it's so interesting. I was just listening to the Leading Saints podcast the other day.
Oh, I love Kurt.
Yeah. So and they were talking, he was talking to some professor, I don't remember, from BYU. And he was talking about, an apostle in the 1900s, early 1900s, who he basically started the institutes and seminaries. And he got some pushback when he proposed this idea because it was basically taking, you know, away the secular learning with the gospel learning and, you know, separating them, you know, having kids go to public school and then the church would just teach the spiritual learning. And, mm-hmm. But it was interesting because Kirk and this man were talking about how so often we think that all the revelation in the church comes from the top down, and so much of it actually comes from the bottom up. And he said, you know, a lot of times the general authorities will watch what wards are doing or stakes are doing, and they won't really correct some things because they want to see how it plays out. And it's kind of like a grassroots type of a concept, like, let's see how this goes.
Well, as President Nelson says, happens. Good inspiration is based on good information. When the church mm-hmm. comes up with new things like ministering or 2 hours church, they did mm-hmm. beta test it in several mm-hmm. units in several areas of the world to see, yeah. okay, how's it going to go? How's it going to be received if we decide to move that route? And then with that information, they get confirmation from the Lord that this is indeed the path to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's, like you said, it's the biggest thing is like that you can receive revelation when you are, you know, in a position in this, you know, to set up how ministering is really going to look in your ward if you're an Elders Quorum president or Relief Site president. But also, again, as a minister, you have so much, you know, Heavenly Father's kind of set it up to be like, you kind of have the world is open to you as to how much you can do as a minister and what you are allowed to do to help those that you serve. So,
and as we do that, we're going to need that revelation because there is no ideal anymore. I remember earlier mm-hmm. talking about the ideal, and that's been nagging at my mind because I am the type of person who the presence of an ideal terrifies, because if I can't do the ideal, I'm not going to do it at all. It's basically how it works out. I'm like, well, I'll just sit there and constantly plan out and try and optimize my approach and then never actually mm-hmm. move forward. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that may be the sentiment many in the church have. I thought, okay, I understood home teaching because it was relatively straightforward. Mm-hmm. Ministering, I'm still trying to understand. And until I really get a grasp on it, I guess I'm just going to hang back. You know, I feel like there's mm-hmm. a little bit of that malaise going on. Mm-hmm. And that brings mm-hmm. up the ministering gap. Now, we need to make sure that we don't let the ideal, the mm-hmm. perfect, become the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of a ward mission leader on my mission. I won't say his name, but he was quite a personality. Mm-hmm. This guy was the most overbearing, overzealous, and tactless man I've ever met when it comes to missionary work. He put every missionary I'd ever met to shame. Mm-hmm. He would accost members in the hallway and just say, "Hey, what's your name?" And say, "Oh, Brother Smith, I've been your home teacher mm-hmm. for 10 years." "Awesome. Brother Smythe, will you say the following words to a non-member this week? Will you come to church with me?" Mm-hmm. And like very just brash. And mm-hmm. internally as missionaries, we kind of spoke bad about him. Like, "Oh man, he's ruining the work. And wow, mm-hmm. he's just so overzealous. You know, can't he learn to, you know, be a good missionary, reach out to people genuinely and nicely and everything." Mm-hmm. And my opinion of him changed when we were driving with him one time and he started listing off all of the people that he had brought to the gospel. So this guy, when it comes to missionary work, was like buckshot. And just going out there, shooting at everything that moves, scaring all the birds. Mm-hmm. But he still hit a lot of things because he was willing to fire the gun. Weird mm-hmm. analogy.
No, I
you
get
know,
it.
Even without aiming and just going trigger happy crazy, mm-hmm. he had more success than mm-hmm. any of the missionaries in our mission. A lot mm-hmm. of good, solid people joined the church because he was not really worried about doing it in the ideal way. He was just mm-hmm. worried about getting it done. And yeah. I feel like maybe we need a little bit more of that in our ministering effort to stop mm-hmm. fretting about what the ideal is. Like if you don't know, if you haven't caught hold of the ministering vision, but you mm-hmm. know how to do home teaching, you start with that. But mm-hmm. don't jettison the progress that you had from earlier years just mm-hmm. because there's a new program in place. Start with what you know. Start with what you're familiar with and you're comfortable with doing, and then branch out from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point because he was being him, right? And I don't think I would ever be like that because that's not me. But what I have to offer is what is needed, right? And I think a lot of times we hold back because we're like, "Oh, well, I'm not going to do that right." Or, you know, "They're not going to like that," or "That shouldn't, maybe that's not the right way to do it." And yet it's just like, well, but just show up and do something, you know, something is better than nothing. Like, just like you said in that analogy, like take the shot because you might actually hit something.
and to all you young single listeners out there, Get dating. You can tell this has a lot of parallels.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to just get it out there, because then it will have greater success, greater chance of having it fall and hit and be successful. So
you say the Lord can't drive a parked car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But I think we get caught up in the church a lot. Like, yeah, as you were saying, ideal, I would say perfectionism, you know, it's got to be perfect. It's got to be, I got to make sure that this is really what Heavenly Father wants me to do. And I'm like, but if it's going for a good result, go for it. You know,
he wants you to be anxiously engaged in a good cause,
yeah,
and not have to compel you in all things. That's what he wants.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I can see in some instances where there's a lot of fear, like, I don't want to do it wrong. I don't want people to think that we're, because when I first kind of mentioned this idea about ministering, you know, it was like, oh, this is kind of rogue. And I'm like, it's not rogue at all.
Rogue?
I'm like, on the scale of rogue, this is like a -5. Like, I'm not like, you know, rogue is me saying, I think the sisters should start giving blessings. Like, that's rogue, you know, like, that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting, like, let's make this, you know, even better, like more, like see if we can like bring more people in by just introducing a slightly different way of doing it and feeling like they have more support. And that they have more people that they can call on, like maybe that will really help as well.
You're talking about for your like communal ministering pods thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and I'm kind of I'm like, let's just try it. See what happens. You know, my bishop's a little bit more hesitant, you know, but
I'm tell him straight. Say, hey, listen, this may fall on its face and completely fail.
Let's give it a shot.
I know.
Yeah, it could totally fail, you know, and
if the handbook allows it, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it could totally fail, but you know, you just have to go and try. And I think we all have our hearts in the right place and we want this to succeed. So let's just go for it. So yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, anything else that stuck out to you?
Yeah, a few things. I really loved his flirt to convert story. Speaking of inspired and unorthodox ways of going about the work, the whole wear a modest swimsuit and get a convert out of it, that's a great story.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's amazing. So yeah, that was cool. Anything else?
I also love that he had a call out about patriarchal blessings. You notice that? That has taken more of a theme this conference than I've ever seen it in my lifetime.
Yeah, there were a couple talks on that for sure. So
it's very cool that got some airtime on this one. Other pieces at the very end, he talks about not being weary in well doing, and burnout is so common, especially you'll see among the overperformers, right? My best ministers. They were the ones that I could tell were starting to get burnout. They didn't want to say it. And I'm trying to encourage them. Okay, listen, hey, listen, you've got a lot of families. Please let me take some off your plate. Please don't run faster than you have strength. You're almost begging them, but you know, they hold on and they work really hard. Mm-hmm. I will say that I've noticed in the callings that I've been in, I do not get weary in well-doing. And I know that sounds like a brag. It's absolutely not. What I'm saying is when I'm actually ministering and the Spirit is there, I feel invigorated. Mm-hmm. It is like a shot in the arm in the most wonderful way. Now, what I do weary of, I don't weary of well doing. I do weary of long meetings. Mm-hmm. I can't think of something more frustrating than a 1.5 hour ward, council or branch council, whichever the case may be for your situation. It goes for 1.5 hours and you spend the entire thing talking about calendaring events and what kind of treats would be appropriate at the ward activity, and all these things that should be emails. My favorite meetings were when I was in a branch presidency in North Carolina, and there was a time when we wrapped up early with our subjects, and we said, hey, let's just go as a presidency and go pop in on people, right? Let's go visit some of the members that, you know, we haven't seen them for a few months. And let me tell you, those experiences going out as a presidency, knocking on someone's door, revelation was received. People came back to church. We had a bigger impact with that 45 minutes at the end of one presidency meeting than we'd had for the past 6 months out of our presidency meetings. So like there is some really powerful stuff. And I would love to see more ministering and less administering in the church. Mm-hmm. And then people will start to resonate with that not weary and well-doing aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. More ministering, not admin. Admin. What did you say?
Administering.
Administering. Yeah. Yeah. That is true. It is true. Like, I think that people really just want to be heard and they want to be understood. And that's one thing I've really learned, like in talking to a bunch of sisters, and we've lived in this ward for quite a while. So I know all of them pretty well. But they're pretty open and they're pretty honest and they do open up, but you just have to give them that chance. And it does require you to minister to them, like in some way, like to ask, to listen, to be interested and involved in their life and know things about them so that you can ask them appropriate questions and help them in the ways that they need. So,
and it's helpful when they're open about it. Right. So he talks about the ministering gap. I remember an experience with the ministering gap in a good way. Mm-hmm. I was assigned as the home teacher to this family, again, in that Spanish branch, the Juanico family. Mm-hmm. And they were more of the high needs family, not so much on the financial side, but on the counseling side and with things going on in their lives. But they were also very open about their needs. And I developed a very good friendship, and they would ask me for blessings, and I'd be coming over to their house and start teaching, you know, piano lessons to their daughter, and had a great relationship with this great couple. And months later, I'd been their home teacher for a year and a half. She was meeting with the branch president, and he said, well, okay, so, and how are things going with your home teachers? And she says, oh, my home teachers never visit. I don't know who my home teachers are, or my home teacher, I guess. We getting companionships is a little difficult in that branch. And he said, oh, really? Well, let me check the system. Well, it says Brother Watkins is your home teacher. He says, he is? He's like, yeah, is he not visiting? Oh, no, he's over three times a month. We're friends. We hang out. It's great. I didn't know he was my – he's over here giving me blessings and dedicating my house and doing all this stuff. I had no idea he was my home teacher. And he said, you know, that's actually a good thing that she didn't see it as a stuffy assignment. Mm-hmm. But that you guys just hit it off and develop this great rapport and relationship. So again, don't be terrorized by the ideal, but that is the ideal that we keep talking about missionary work being this, and the church uses this language all over the time, Elder Bednar, especially in the love, share, and invite thing, normal and natural ways, right? When reading the Bible dictionary, when it talks about prayer, it says, once you understand your relationship with Heavenly Father, prayer becomes natural and instinctive. That's really the message of the gospel is we start you out with a checklist. You get this idea of what's expected, but at the end of the day, I want you to have this in your heart to where it is normal, natural, instinctive. You can't help but want to reach out and bless people and reach out and share the gospel and reach out and minister.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of along those lines, that's one thing that we also implemented is we actually looked at who were friends and we actually put them in circles together.
Ta-da! Because you already have, you know, right like, on your ministry.
I know. Because I was like, why are we trying to reinvent a wheel that's already working? Like, why don't we use it to our advantage? You know, and some people will say, well, what about cliques? And I'm like, well, the cliques are already existing, whether I put them in a circle or not, you know? And so, and I think we give cliques kind of a bad rap, and I don't know that they're necessary. They don't have to be bad. Like, it's just the people that you naturally kind of gravitate towards.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, well, why don't we just use those to our advantage in this system? And just make it so easy, almost too easy, to the point where it's like, you kind of have no excuse now if it's not working because I've put you with the people that you naturally are with anyway, because, you know, those are the people you are going to say, hey, I need a blessing. Hey, I'm really struggling with this. And it's just already.
And you're over at their house already anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally fine to take a pragmatic approach to that, right? Like, one of my friends is not terribly active in the church. Well, I'm probably going to be his minister because guess what? If he ever does want to get active in the church or wants a blessing or needs anything, he's going to come to me no matter who his ministering brother is.
Right.
Right. So it's totally fine to be pragmatic in those assignments.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something that we tried to do. Even with youth, like our ministers, you know, we tried to say, okay, these families would be good because their kids get along, you know, and it will be easier for them to minister to each other. So, yeah, because that's a whole other layer, right, of the young men and young women coming in as well. So,
yeah, and that's exciting. Yeah. If done right, the young men and young women can bring a zeal and an energy that sometimes the Korma Relief Society is missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good to know. So thanks for that advice. I'll make sure to make sure that happens in my ward. So yeah, awesome.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of the Conference Talk Podcast. This episode, we discuss Elder Gong's address, one word title, ministering.
Yep. If you enjoyed this episode, give us a 5-star rating. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you get podcasts. You can find links to all our podcast platforms on our website, conferencetalk.org.
Conferencetalk.org is also where you can follow us on social media, drop us a comment, check out the show notes, find resources we mentioned in this episode, and learn more about us, your hosts.
If you want to follow me, Meg Tilton, you can find me on Instagram at Meg Tilton Coaching, also on Facebook, or you can go to my website, megtiltoncoaching.com.
And you can find me, Matthew Watkins, at my blog, powerinthebook.com, or on Twitter. My handle is Joyful Repenter.
All right, but while we always appreciate new followers, it's better to follow the prophet and the apostles themselves.
Yep, even though we love speaking about the church and our leaders, we do not speak for them. Everything said on this podcast represents our own personal opinions.
So join us next week for some more personal opinions next week on the Conference Talk Podcast.
And reach out to your ministering families.
That's right.